Please keep in mind that listener discretion is advised. While I do my best to remain respectful to all the victims, this is a true and harsh reality of what horrible humans do. So it doesn't do any help to sugarcoat it. Like I said, I will do my best to be respectful. However, please listen at your own discretion. If you're having a hard time, turn it off. If you need some resources to talk, shoot me a message. Chances are, I know somebody. I hope you have a great day, and thank you again for listening. Welcome back to the Reaper Report. Today, we're talking about Edward Theodore Gein, the Mad Butcher of Plainfield. That name probably sounds pretty familiar to you. Ed Gein was actually the inspiration for a lot of movies such as Psycho, Silence of the Lambs, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and if that doesn't really jog your memory, Buffalo Bill, Leatherface. Come on now, put the lotion in the basket. I'm trying to walk around with a skin suit. Let's go. Just kidding, that's absolutely disgusting. Don't walk around in a skin suit. Okay, thanks. Ed Gein was born August 29th in 1906 in La Crosse, Wisconsin. His mother, Augusta, was very strict, very religious, and a lot of the reports say that she was very plump. This will come into play a little bit later. And then his father, George, was there. He was very drunk. He couldn't really hold down a job, and he was pretty abusive to his family. He just wasn't nice. Their mom was just ridiculous. Ed also had an older brother named Henry, and they got along really well. Augusta was very, very religious, and so she thought that any outside influence would actually harm her boys. So growing up, she taught her boys that women were prostitutes and they were tools of the devil. All but herself, because she couldn't do that. How possibly could? She's their mother. She's the best. Augusta ended up keeping the boys pretty secluded, and they ended up moving to Plainville, Wisconsin, where they lived on a 155-acre farm, and the boys only left the farm to go to school, so all they had were each other. Growing up, Ed was pretty shy, but, you know, he made a couple jokes, but he had lacked a lot of social skills because it was just him and his family. Ed was known to be kind of shy. He would laugh randomly, but he didn't really cause any trouble. He just kind of kept to himself. So there wasn't really much known about him in the town. He was kind of weird, but like that doesn't mean you're automatically a bad person. You know, like, ooh, so-and-so's weird. Like, I'm weird all the time. Like, I'll talk to myself. My boyfriend will look at me and I'll just like laugh because I'm thinking about something funny that happened a couple years ago or whatever. But anyway, a lot of people joke around. In 1940, on April 1st, George ended up dying of a heart attack. So the boys ended up going and finding odd jobs around town, trying to make sure that ends were met and, you know, that their mom didn't have to worry. After George had passed away, Ed ended up getting a really close attachment to his mom. Meanwhile, Henry was kind of like, you know what? I don't really agree with everything that she's teaching us. Maybe, you know, I can kind of look out and kind of think of other things and I can have my own ideas. Henry had tried to explain his concerns to Ed and was like, I think you're getting a little too close. This is kind of strange. Maybe you should kind of learn to think for yourself. I don't know. And Ed didn't really take too well to that. He was very possessive over his mom. He loved her, very devoted. Don't get me wrong. I love my mom. I'm a mama's girl. However, I'm not as crazy as Ed. But if you talk about my mama, these hands are ready for everybody. Thank you. So a little bit after that conversation that Henry and Ed had, there was a fire that came pretty close to the farm. And the boys had went over there to go and try to snuff it out. This happened in 1944. A little bit later, Ed came back. Henry did not. It was later found that Henry had received blunt force trauma to the head. But the coroner had said that he had died of asphyxiation. And it's crazy because, again, they both went to the fire to go put it out. Only Ed came back. They had just had an argument, but there was no proof or evidence that Ed had actually killed Henry. So they were just like, all right, whatever, let him go. About a year later, after Henry had passed, Augusta had a stroke in 1945. So Ed ultimately became her caretaker. He was completely devoted her. So I'm sure he was just like, this is my time to shine. However, she was still pretty verbally abusive, things, so they get into a rut. Or they'll run with it and make something great out of themselves. They'll pull a Ed Gein. 10 out of 10, don't recommend. At this time, he had been about 37 and he didn't have any major skills. But he had been left the family home. So think about this. You have this giant, massive home, 155 acres, and your entire family is gone. It didn't really seem like the type of guy who was going to venture out and go talk to a whole bunch of people and try to make new friends. But the neighbors around town, they just saw him whenever he had to go and grab groceries or, run to the store for a couple necessities, or he would get a drink at the local bar. And the owner of the bar, oddly enough, went missing. Now, Ed wasn't initially linked to it, but he would joke around saying that, oh, yeah, like she's staying at my house. I mean, don't joke about that. Like, you're weird, Ed. Stop it. This is where things get a little weird. Ed was known to spend a lot of his time in the kitchen, and he would read a lot about death cults and adventure stories. Now, there's nothing wrong with reading about information like that. I mean, you're sitting here listening to a true crime podcast or true crime, whatever. You're in the true crime world, so you want to know about this stuff. Just don't do what they're doing, please. Like, that's all I ask. If you want to start your own cult, that's cool, but like, be respectful and like, just don't. I don't want to know about it. Anyway, don't start your own cult. So Ed would spend his time again in the kitchen, not really doing too much, saying that there was this guy named Gus, but he ended up in a elderly home and there wasn't any evidence that kind of linked him back to him helping Ed. But Ed would go in the middle of the night and pretty much go grave digging, and he would dig up freshly buried middle-aged women, bring them back, and use them in his house of horror. Then he decided that, you know what, the skin's not staying as fresh as I want it to, because he's trying to make a skin suit. You'll find out in a couple seconds. He's trying to make a skin suit. And he was saying that the women in the graves, their skin wasn't as malleable, so he would need to get fresh women to use his stuff. In November of 1957, Ed ended up being connected to the disappearance of Bernice Worden. Her son had come back checking on her, and when he had walked back into the shop, he had seen the pool of blood and called the police. The police walked in, saw a trail of blood, and led him back to Ed's house. Ed had left a receipt there, and Ed had also said, oh, I'll come back the next day for some antifreeze. So the son was like, hello. Once they ended up getting to the house, they had enough evidence to search the entire property. What they found was absolutely insane. It's pretty safe to say that nobody in Wisconsin had even thought this. I just. Here's a list of items that were found in the House of Horrors. They found Warden. She was hung up, shot, and decapitated. They found her head in a bag, and she was hanging upside down in the shed, and she was being gutted as if you were field dressing a deer. So her intestines were taken out. He was taking parts of her skin. But that's only part of what they found. They also found a shoebox with female genitalia, a belt made out of nipples, a vest made out of breast, a human heart in a paper bag. I don't know what he was doing with it. I don't know. I don't know. Tops of human skulls as bowls. So I mean, I guess you're living on a farm, so nobody's really gonna hear you like sawing that off. And why would you eat? Why are you gonna use it as a bowl? They found a human head, like I mentioned earlier. There was human skin covering armchairs. Then they had other organs in the fridge, along with whole human bones and then fragments of bone. So this man, it was like Build-A-Bear, but Build-A-Body. It's ridiculous. Just give me like real Buffalo Bill Leatherface vibes, and not a fan. It's like he's building a body, like full blown building a body. And then I'm like, he wants to be his mom. His mom died. He's obsessed with his mom, and he's just gonna be his mom. That's disgusting, and that's sick. Like that's there are people who have mommy issues and daddy issues, but then there's this. Please don't get like this. When asked what he was doing, told police, he's like, I like to dress up as my mom, and I like to go outside in the moon, and I like to dance around, and I like to feel like it's her. Then a lot of the women that he would target, they looked pretty similar to his mom. So they were pretty plump, kind of same shape. things like that. He had confessed to killing Mary Hogan. She was a tavern owner. She had gone missing in 1954. However, he had pled not guilty by reason of insanity. He ended up going into a mental institution, and then he was found fit in 1968, where within the week, found guilty. Full blown, yep, bro, you did it. What's so crazy is that when he was a patient in the institution for the criminally insane, the staff had said that he was a pretty well-behaved patient. He didn't cause any trouble, wasn't very violent, was very helpful, especially in the occupational program. In the occupational therapy program. And it was just, it's kind of crazy. It just seemed very odd why he did those things. His whole motive was he wanted to create a skin suit so he could pretend to be his mom. There were, of course, the town was up in arms about it as soon as they found out about it. I mean, you go in, it is a house of horrors. You have human body parts scattered all around. You've got lamps made of skin, faces that are hanging up on the wall. And Bernice, they had actually found her head and she had two nails in her ears. What was he going to do with that? Hang her up on a wall. I don't even want my ears pierced anymore. I'm taking them out. I'm done. Not doing it. In 1958, the town was not having... And mysteriously in 1958, his house was burned down. And when he was told about it, his reaction was just as well. It really seemed like he didn't have any attachment to the house, didn't really have any attachment to the things that he had done. He was just, it seemed like he was kind of just living in the moment, like, okay, cool, I'm gonna put all these things together, I'm gonna do this, this is gonna make me feel good, bring me closer to my mom. He had completed his suit and then he got caught, because it seems, and that is also something that's interesting as well, because he left a pool of blood. Now, he hadn't gotten caught before, but he left a pool of blood, which literally showed the police, like, hey, I did it. It's like right there. He was a model prisoner. Very nice. Didn't do anything crazy. Ed was diagnosed as a schizophrenic and a sexual psychopath. It was also said that he had developed a sexual attraction to his mother, which then in turn caused develop into a full-blown psychosis. One thing Ed was very adamant about is that he never had sex with them after they were dead. There's a lot of evidence saying he was a cannibal. So I don't care what you did. Don't touch a dead body. You're a necrophiliac. Necro anything is disgusting. Don't do it. That he had about like a 5-year killing spree. It was for a lot of people that were said to be his victims, but then there wasn't any evidence to actually connect him. So a lot of people say that he is a serial killer, but technically he's not, because a serial killer is 3 or more. But who am I? I'm just me. The two known victims were Mary Hogan. Her death was December 8th, 1954. She was found in his house decapitated. And then on November 17th, 1957, Bernice Worden, which is how they ended up connecting. All right, y'all, well, that's a little crazy for me. I just don't even know what to think. It's really interesting because it seems like he didn't really want to go and kill anybody at first. He was just kind of like, I mean, I can kind of do this easy. They're already there. They're already dead. They're probably not going to feel it. So he was kind of being cool about it. And then he was like, all right, well, I already killed once my brother. And then let me just go kill some more women. I feel like he was totally fine with all of that. Ed's story is really strange because it just seems like you've got this quiet guy in the town. He would babysit for people. I mean, how weird is that growing up? Yeah, my babysitter was Ed Gein. Like, how did the parents not see the lampshades in the house? That's all I want to know. Either way, this is the story of Ed Gein. I'm pretty sure there's a lot more. There's tons of pictures that are out there. I don't really want to put them on here just because they are pretty brutal, pretty gruesome. So if you do want to go check them out, I suggest you do Google them. If you guys thank you so much for taking the time to listen. Don't forget to rate and subscribe. You can find us on Spotify, Anchor, anywhere that you get your podcast. We are also on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. Just search The Reaper Report. You'll find the girl with the purple hair.